Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show.
So,
let's do it. Are you emotionally intelligent?
Am I emotionally intelligent?
Yeah, are you emotionally intelligent? Would you consider yourself emotionally intelligent?
Well, I would consider the phrase to be something I'd be like, what? What is that at first? And then I'd just be like, well, sure, why not? I'm intelligent.
Sure.
So, yes, the answer is yes.
Okay, that sounds good. All right, I'm just checking.
How do you feel?
How do I feel about you or how do I feel about...
Which one of us is emotionally intelligent? Yes, right? Should we start out the day like this or... Is this going to be in my PDP?
This is a podcast for good one off the rails this time. Heyo, welcome to season 3, episode 21. We are talking emotional intelligence. My name is Philip Kerrigan. I'm the program manager of the Washington Combined Fund Drive. I am joined by
Heather Lucas, the fiscal and policy coordinator of the Washington State Combined Fund Drive.
Yes, she is.
Yes,
we are talking about emotional intelligence, and we talked to Pamela Sackett, the founder and what was the other
principal thing? Artist
and principal artist associated with the Emotion Literacy Advocates. They're an organization that creates learning forums and tools, providing insight through into emotions through language and the arts.
Yeah.
So they use art and the written word and performance and all that sort of stuff to try and get people more in touch with their emotional center.
Yeah,
is the best way to describe it. As she was talking, it sounded a bit like what they do for actors when they're attempting to teach them how to how to get to a character.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I was. That's
what's my motivation.
What's my motivation and like telling truths and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
that they talk about when they talk to actors. So it's a very interesting conversation. Before we dive into that, though, you do have a question of the pod, and what is it?
Yeah, so it's of course about emotion.
Sure.
Philip Kerrigan, what emotion do you experience that you want to change the most?
Well, you're getting too deep.
Yeah, I know.
Now I feel like I need to be on a couch.
Do you want to hold my hand?
I don't want to hold your hand.
Do you want a coffee or a cocoa?
Well, I wouldn't want a coffee.
Yeah. I don't have a coffee.
It's like coffee time, so yeah, I could use a coffee.
Coffee
anytime.
Time, right, yeah.
I feel like anger is the emotion that I would change the most.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe I snap too much sometimes at my kids.
Okay.
And I could do a better job at that.
Okay.
I find myself probably angry about stupid little things that I probably shouldn't find myself angry about.
You feel like they're more trivial?
Yeah, they're more trivial. And then afterwards you go like, well, that was stupid.
Yeah.
Why was I even mad at that? That was dumb. You know what I find the most interesting thing, though, is when you get mad at something and halfway through you being mad at it, your brain is like, you know, this is a stupid thing
to
get mad at. But you keep going.
You're already invested at that
you
point.
You keep going because you're pot committed. Yeah. You gotta finish this out.
Yeah.
And then immediately afterwards, you're like, that was dumb. That was stupid.
All of that was terrible, and I'm sorry.
But I had to stick to my guns.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't leave the room then.
Yeah.
Can't concede defeat halfway through my argument.
Yeah.
Even though it's stupid.
Or you see somebody who's having that moment.
Yeah.
And you see it in their eyes when it clicks that, yes, this is ridiculous.
This is dumb.
You're going off the rails for
no
reason.
Yes. You know exactly when you've nailed somebody else in an argument, too, by the way. You see it in their face where you're like, I got you. And then they keep going, flailing super hard to try and stay in. And you're like, I got you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there. What about you?
I think frustration is probably the one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
because
like I could get frustrated at stuff that's trivial, stuff that doesn't matter, you know. But it is always something that leads to other things. Like frustration would lead to me being angry, or frustration leads to me being impatient.
Right.
You know. So like it's one of those things that I feel is like a gateway drug.
Oh,
an emotional gateway drug.
Oh, an emotional gateway drug. You should coin that phrase.
New band name.
Emotional gateway drug. Ooh, that is a good
Write
band.
It down.
Yeah.
We're going to have to like publish a list of all these
we
band
will.
Names.
We will definitely have to do that.
Emotional gateway drug.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good.
Yeah. So I feel like frustration is the one that that gets it for me, where it's just, it leads to all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And none of it's ever fun.
I know. Yeah. I know. It's always the seeds of things you don't like.
Exactly.
So enough of us. We're going to lead you into our interview with Pamela Sackett. She's going to talk about her organization and really how art helps people tap into becoming emotionally intelligent. Here is that interview.
Okay, so we're here with Pamela Sackett. She is the founder and principal artist for Emotion Literacy Advocates. Pamela, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
So can you give us a little history about Emotion Literacy Advocates and what you do for the community?
Yes. The history is that I'm an artist. I'm a language artist. So I write songs. I write plays. You know, I write different kinds of material, scripts. I've designed plays for special populations. I've written books. And I have done a lot of work as a teaching artist, so through arts and education programs, and also I did quite a bit of work as a teaching artist for Seattle Repertory Theater Company.
Okay.
And that included working in King County Youth Detention Facility and also North Rehab Facility, which was a minimum security prison for adult felons.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked in the jail school for youth, with youth, at the King County facility, and also in the lockup units, and wrote a play about my work there. So I've done a lot of work looking at language, how language influences, how the way we think influences our relationship to the different kinds of circumstances we find ourselves in in life, and certainly how we interact and how we communicate. And I've done a lot of research and have done a lot of my own sort of personal work. And eventually that led to a group of people coming together and saying, you know, we need to, this is a larger concern. This is, we need to reach more people. We need to find a way to structurally support this kind of work that I was doing in the schools. And it wasn't always, you know, I wasn't always by myself. I had other people that I worked with, and including, you know, actors sometimes, musical people. Just all the kinds of things you would imagine are needed when you do this kind of artistic work.
Mm-hmm.
And that just followed suit into the work under the auspices of the nonprofit. There was more support. There were ways for us to get further out into the community. We create learning tools. We started doing that, little learning tools using songs and theatrical material that have reached a lot of people through social service agencies and also Seattle public and private schools, and also actually people that go to cinema houses. One of the learning tools we created had a four-month tour in the state of Washington, and actually is now in the archives, the film archives of UCLA and the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences.
Nice.
It's been an interesting kind of journey to use the arts to teach something that I call and have been calling it emotion literacy since 1992.
Okay.
Awesome.
So is your primary group of people that you're serving, is it primarily schools or artists or theater? Like who's the primary client, so to speak?
Well, I could say yes to all of that. On our website, we show that our work has touched the arts, theater and entertainment, other nonprofits, radio, broadcast, and television. Wherever, you know, an artistic work might go, the difference is we are also doing something that we consider to be educational and for social change, because we're dealing with communication. So where our work went into the schools, and originally my work went into the schools. I went into the schools.
Mm-hmm.
And then other things happened. We created other kinds of works, and Seattle Children's Museum has been a beneficiary of our work. Bellevue Art Museum, institutes and colleges and universities, both in here, in the States, in the Northwest, in Canada, different presentations I've done. Anyone who is interested in communication,
okay,
and finds that an important focal point is how, either in a work setting or any kind of setting where communication influences the quality of your work and the quality of your interactions with people in a social setting.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Our work, I have to say, is very, especially now, we have a new program that incorporates a lot of the programs that we've been using and finding application for out in the community. We've put that all together into an online curriculum now, and that is also, that includes a little book that actually really does define emotion literacy. It kind of distills the core concepts down, because I think that not everybody agrees on what emotional intelligence means or what it's for. And a lot of how any of that got started, and I thought of the term emotion literacy in 1992 before I ever heard of it. I had never heard of it. I was presenting a workshop, and I also was a guest poet for a conference here in Seattle that had to do with recovery.
Uh-huh.
and mental health. And I thought of the term. I thought it would be, because I was using theatrical material, and I was going to be performing different characters that had communication problems. they didn't have the skills they needed to really convey what they felt or what they needed. And I thought emotion literacy was the perfect way to identify that, because oftentimes emotions are not clear communicators of
sure.
what we feel and what we need. And so, therefore, a lot of the work that I do, in that work, I don't interchange emotions and feelings. I see them as two different sort of realms. Emotions are more about behavior, and they are expressions that happen, or even body language. And feelings are nonverbal and often hidden from view. You have to really see, what does that mean? And that's actually part of the work I do, is to read your own dictionary. What do things mean to you? Because even in the social discourse we have, it seems like we're talking about we have the same topics we're focused on, but people have different orientations, and that's the kind of thing that I teach, is what's between the lines. Using theatrical material is a perfect way to represent that, to demonstrate that. Oftentimes in theatrical scripts, the characters, are saying one thing, but actually there's something else going on. So for emotional intelligence, I think from what I've learned, all programs related to emotional intelligence acknowledge the gravity of emotion and its bearing on social interaction in every setting. And what I've researched and found is that the primary aim in social-emotional learning programs, SEL programs, is emotion management for social, meaning group and group kinds of experiences, for social success, for group success, taught through the application of hard science. And what we're doing is language management, and I have to say right now, although some of my work has been translated into other languages, but I would say English language management for self-understanding and social change taught through the application of the creative arts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's different. It's different. It's not for corporate, big industry, big groups, leadership skills.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we deny the relevance of that and the importance of that. It's just we're sort of going to the earlier steps,
mm-hmm.
of what is the individual experiencing? How are they grappling with the need to communicate certain things?
Mm-hmm.
And also we go on the premise that when you have a strong communicative individual, you're more likely to have a strong understanding group.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing to consider, is that a lot of these kinds of programs are looking for the good of the social, the good of the group. And oftentimes the individual needs and the group needs aren't exactly the same, and both have to be considered. So that's another thing that we look at and, mm-hmm. and attend to.
How does improving emotional intelligence skills make someone a better person? What are some of the things as they get better at being emotionally intelligent? What are some of the things that change a person for the better?
Well, it's really the quality of a person's life.
Mm-hmm.
It's their perception. It's their ability to have clearer perception. It's their ability to understand that we all have different identities. We don't just have a group identity. And many of us are identified with, you know, a number of groups.
Right.
It's more individual. It's more identifying with your interior.
Mm-hmm.
It's really understanding what's really true for you, what's going on internally. And that is going to, if you can connect more closely with yourself and have more clarity within yourself, then what you bring to a group is going to be affected by
mm-hmm.
that.
Yeah.
And it's something that takes time, it takes patience, and it takes a lot of support, because mostly we're going at a fast pace, and our interactions are quite machine-mediated now, as I don't have to tell you, I'm
mm-hmm.
sure.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, what happens is the individual kind of drops out of the picture,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
we're more, I mean, the more trauma there is in a culture, the more people are focused on security and fitting in with the group
mm-hmm.
and being connected to the group. And the kind of things that I'm encouraging people to look at and spend time with is something you have to have a certain amount of a sense of safety to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
When you're feeling pushed and rushed and, you know, if you're in a competitive mode or if you feel at risk, those aren't the kinds of things you're going to be looking at, because that's not the part of your brain that you're going to be enlisting
mm-hmm.
in some of those activities.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the ways we think are very polarized, and a lot of that comes from a part of our brain that really doesn't think in anything but black and white. It
mm-hmm.
doesn't think in grays.
Yeah.
And a lot of the creative changes that we can bring to a culture has to come from some of those more nuanced ways of thinking, and you really have to have a certain amount of sense of security and support to be even able to go mm-hmm. to that part of yourself and
yeah.
be reflective.
Yeah.
To reflect and understand what things mean to you, that is going to really increase,
yeah.
you know, it's going to really make your quality of life different. It's going to change your quality of life. It's going to improve your quality of life. And it's not to say that you're going to get all your needs met, but even just to know what they are,
mm-hmm.
and to be able to affirm them for yourself, that sounds kind of counterintuitive. Why be aware of a need if you can't fill it? Well, sometimes that's part of how you fill it. It's just being aware that you have that. And sometimes, too, you know, you don't even know you have it. So first you want to know you have it. You have a certain kind of soft need. And I'm talking about the kinds of needs that you have, you know, just in terms of feeling like you're being seen and heard and trusted and supported and you're connected, and to be able to offer that back. Those are soft needs. So those aren't the needs that oftentimes that are even on our map.
Sure.
So that's what we encourage. You know, it seems like such an abstract thing, but it really does. It does have a lot of gravity in your interactions and in the part you play in any kind of group.
Mm-hmm. So, since you've talked about being a creative person yourself, how do you think using art, theater, music, writing, those kinds of ideas to improve emotional literacy or emotional intelligence for somebody? How do they help to improve that for a person?
Well, for one, let's just take a song. because that's one of the primary ways I teach.
Okay.
A song is going to affect your senses, a number of your senses. You know, you're listening, you're maybe drawing pictures in your mind as you listen to the story that unfolds in the song. The song has the music, you know, just is a physical experience. As opposed to talking about these ideas, talking about the ideas and their, you know, nuances aren't that linear. You know, there's a complexity to them. So lyrically and poetically, you can represent ideas and feelings a little bit easier. And you're not really talking about them, you're more representing them or demonstrating them. So, say, in one of the first songs that we put out once we became a nonprofit is a song called The Full Spectrum Birthday Song. And that song was, 8,000 of those were requested by 23 social service agencies in Oregon, Idaho, and Washington. And those were given to for parent training programs, for CPS referred homes, to the Pierce Tacoma or the Pierce County Health Department, Family Support Partnership. People brought that song into a home or into a hospital, and the song is about celebrating all your feelings, because what we teach is about the capacity to feel, that we want to encourage having a capacity to feel, not so much playing favorites with one feeling over another. And again, that seems counterintuitive, but we're feeling beings, and we're going to cycle through, as you watch children cycle through feelings all day long. One minute they're crying, the next minute they're laughing, and they don't stop at any one. They just cycle through. It's very fluid. So that's what the song is about. It's a very celebratory song, and it really acknowledges birthdays as a special day. And it also acknowledges all kinds of feelings. So the song really kind of takes you through a kind of thinking that allows you to consider that idea of feeling capacity. And, you know, kids dance to it. It's been used in schools. And, you know, on some level, maybe they're not paying real close attention to the lyrics, but it's getting in. The ideas are getting in somehow. So that's part of it, is to reach parts of yourself that, you know, our conscious linear way of thinking sometimes doesn't include a lot of parts of a process. And these do. These, you know, the scripts show a character going through one of the learning tools is little 5-minute vignettes that have aired on the radio and have been discussed and have been used in the health education curriculum at Seattle Public Schools district-wide. And there, you know, you have identification with the character. It's just like anything else you would see. You know, when a movie tells a story, it's important you have characters and they have lines to say and they're wearing something that makes them look like, you know, how they're supposed to look. And, you know, you just kind of, you know, lose yourself in it, but you get drawn in. You get engaged by it. And it's, you know, they're complex ideas, and they're difficult to represent. Feelings, you know, you can give them to the characters. The characters can have them. Then you could talk about the feelings. And it just gives a way for people to engage and also to find identification for their own lives.
Yeah.
So, Pamela, let's say someone hears this podcast and wants to start giving to emotion literacy advocates. Can you talk a little bit about what donations do for your organization?
Well, we have very specific things. Most of our organization, I have to say, including the majority of my time, and all the artists that have been involved and all the technical consultants and, you know, all the different ways we've put these learning tools together, most people, as I say, including myself, are volunteers. So there are certain expenses, like, for instance, we have a new book coming out, and we're printing it. And believe it or not, it's going to be a little printed book, a very little sort of pocket, a book you could fit in your pocket. And that costs.
Yeah.
give a $10 donation, that will allow, I mean, they could go and get the books for themselves at $10. But if they want to donate $10, we can then give a copy of one of the books to a school or to a library.
Yeah.
Or, you know, to a social service agency. We could give these, because all the tools, the learning tools that the schools used, the learning tool that the social service agencies used, the cinema houses, they all got that at no cost. So when people can underwrite even just one book or one, well, we still have CDs, but we have other ways to, you know, we have MP3s as well. But right now we have the curriculum that's online and we have the little book. So that they would go to tremendous use. We have very concrete things that we have for years been giving to people. And, it's either offered in kind because we were able to get service people to actually replicate and, you know, create these things, replicate these things for us so we could actually give out thousands of these.
Mm-hmm.
Or an agency, say, in L.A. that did the conversion for us to go from digital to 35 millimeters so we could provide that for the cinema houses. So those are the kind of things. We have arts-based learning tools, and many people are interested in it and in them, and some can't afford it.
Sure.
So that would be one really good thing to do. And it's really helpful for people, for themselves, to engage in what we have, to actually go online and read some of the material. We have a lot of things posted online. So that's one of the ways we do our mission. We want these ideas to spread far and wide so we can create stronger, more communicative groups and individuals.
Yeah, so speaking of anything online, do you have any upcoming events or any programs you'd like to highlight?
Yes, I would. We have a program that is online. It's an arts-based learning curriculum teaching emotion literacy through self-reflective writing, using mm-hmm. the arts as prompts for self-reflective writing. So there's a lot of the songs that we've had and different scripts. We have a lot of audios. We have all our learning tools are compiled into this. It's a culmination, and we've added additional things. So someone could go to open.emolit.org. That's the website that has the curriculum. You would need, it's a password-protected curriculum. And we also have the book, which is called I Can. And the curriculum is called My Alphabet to Freedom, Liberating the Language of Choice and Connection. And all of the core concepts of that curriculum are in this little book called I Can.
Okay.
Subtitled 12 Ways to Witness the Heart. And they give the main ideas and the definition of what emotion literacy is, as I have come to understand it, as I have sort of created it in 1992. And they could find out about that book on that website, open.emolit.org, E-M-O-L-I-T.org.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I believe there are links also to our main website and to our blog where you could learn, too, about, you know, what people have said who have learned our tools, what it's meant to them and what it's contributed to their lives.
Great. That sounds really awesome.
Excellent.
Well, thank you. And the ICANN book went to press just yesterday.
All right.
Congratulations.
Yes. And today I've gotten, you know, they sent me a soft proof.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a printing house in Minnesota that's working on it right
now. All right.
And that book should be available in a couple of weeks.
Awesome.
At the most, I believe. But you could be updated if you go to ICANN book on the Inside Emotion Literacy website. So yeah, the timing is kind of interesting because we just finally sent it off yesterday.
Excellent.
And, we're really excited because I think it's going to give people a much clearer picture in kind of plain English. We have
yeah.
Yeah. arts.
Yeah.
And this is more of a kind of a plain English piece, really just explaining what is emotion literacy? What does it really mean and what does it do?
Yeah.
So that will be available soon.
Excellent. Well, Pamela, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
You're so very welcome. It's an honor to speak with you both.
Okay, and that was our interview with Pamela Sackett. A really interesting interview about how art affects emotion and how she is trying through sort of the group experimentation and look into arts, how she's attempting to get people to connect more emotionally. So that was pretty neat.
Yeah.
You look like you have facts and figures. I find it hard to believe that somehow you found facts and figures about emotional intelligence, but
oh,
you
I
did.
Oh, I totally did.
All right,
yeah.
All right. So hit me with
so
it.
So first, I mean, you know, there's the definition
yes.
of emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. We probably should have covered this before we got into the interview, but whatever.
Sure,
here
sure,
we
sure.
are.
We'll
here
do it
we
now.
The capacity to be aware of, control, and express one's emotions, and to handle interpersonal relationships judiciously and empathetically.
Got it. Okay.
So it's something that people use for, like, personal success as mm-hmm. well as, like, leadership stuff, right?
Yeah.
So there's been a, like, five pillars of emotional intelligence
five
kind of discussion.
Pillars.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So some of those things are, like, some people who talk about emotional intelligence have, like, different names for them. But for this one guy called Daniel Goleman, uh-huh. he developed this framework for what the five pillars are, right?
Uh-huh.
So he says self-awareness,
uh-huh.
self-regulation,
okay.
motivation,
uh-huh.
empathy, and social skills.
Okay.
So, like, self-awareness, you don't let your feelings and emotions rule you. You recognize when you're feeling something,
yeah.
right? It's also how you recognize your own strengths and weaknesses.
Yes.
Okay. Self-regulation, ability to control emotions and impulses, thinking mm-hmm. before you acting,
yep.
a.k.a. discipline.
Discipline.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Being calm is something that is just as contagious as panicking, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're in a leadership position mm-hmm. and or like if you're on a plane, you're mm-hmm. the pilot and you're losing your mind.
That's a bad thing.
That's a bad thing. Yeah. Everybody else is going to lose their mind, too.
Right.
Even if, you know, it's a small little thing.
Right.
So motivation. If you have a high emotional intelligence quotient, you are willing to defer immediate results for long-term success.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's not something where you're looking instant gratification all the time.
Right.
Empathy,
mm-hmm.
ability to feel and identify with the wants, needs, and viewpoints of everybody around
mm-hmm,
you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you got to be empathetic and compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you are kind of an island.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I tend to believe that probably more people are not emotionally intelligent than people that are.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that I'm in that realm, but you never know, because like part of emotional intelligence also seems to be your effect on other people.
Yeah.
Right? And you don't necessarily know what your effect on other people is from time to time.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it's hard to tell. And sometimes you can't figure it out, like,
mm-hmm.
what impact you have on people until it's way later.
Right, right.
Sometimes, you know, people do that thing where they cover up, you know, how
that
you
as
make
well.
Me feel, right?
Yep, that's right.
And then social skills, like how you interact with everybody and, like, helping people with their successes
mm-hmm.
and, you
mm-hmm.
know, championing people.
Yes.
But I did take a how emotionally intelligent quiz.
Okay.
Like, how emotionally intelligent are you?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I'll put a link for that online.
Okay,
so
and where did you
it.
Land again?
So there are 14 questions.
Yes.
Okay. Well, it says 15 statements to answer. Sorry, 15 questions.
Okay.
So there's things like you go from a scale of answering not at all, rarely, sometimes, often, very often, right?
Kay.
That's your scale. So the things are like, I can recognize my emotions as I experience it,
mm-hmm.
experience them. I find it difficult to move on when I feel frustrated or unhappy. I struggle to build rapport with others.
Okay.
Right? So my score was 45 out of 75. So
okay.
I'm right in the middle. And it
dead,
says
dead center.
It says your emotional intelligence level is ... Okay.
It's like that commercial. Just okay is not okay.
Yeah. Is this good enough for me?
I will be more specific.
Yeah. You probably have good relationships with some of your colleagues, but others may be more difficult to work with. Philip Kerrigan.
What?
No, you'd probably be the one I have a good relationship
Sweet.
With. Yeah. Good news is that I have a great opportunity to improve.
Excellent.
Right.
That's great.
So
great news.
I'm curious. I imagine
silver lining.
Yeah, silver lining. I imagine that your emotional intelligence is probably ... okay as well. At least
I would think. I would
at
hope
least.
It's ...
okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I'll put that online.
That's
so people
cool.
can also
I like that. Yeah.
Take that
I think people will dig that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. There are a number of quizzes online, and one of them had like this whole facial recognition thing.
Oh wow!
And it was just images of people making faces.
Yeah.
And it would have something like somebody making like a sour face, right? And it'd be like, are they frustrated or happy, sad,
mm-hmm.
angry?
Yeah.
And I'd be like,
I don't know.
Angry? I'd be like, no, they're frustrated.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, is this person feeling fear? I don't know. Right. I mean, is there a lion chasing them? Yeah. Or yeah. are they standing on the edge of a cliff here? Like,
I need context. Yeah.
I know they're not happy.
Right.
So, yeah, there was another one like that. And I was like, yeah, I answered three questions, got two of them wrong. So I was like, I'm done.
Okay, yeah. That's how emotional intelligence. I'm over it.
I'm over it. I'm done. That may have been frustration.
That's right. Yeah. Your fast clicking was frustration.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's good stuff. Yeah. So thank you, Pamela Sackett, for coming on to the show and talking a little bit about emotional intelligence. Talk a little bit about some upcoming events. So the month of July is CFD's 35th birthday. As many of you probably know who are listening, by now we've been hyping it up. In a couple weeks, we'll have multiple different promotions going on. We'll have a T-shirt sale. We'll have a really cool gathering that's a film festival sort of birthday party. It should be super fun. We also have Tacoma Rainiers. So all that's coming up in the month of July. Check the website for more details. We'll also have local coordinator trainings in August. And for those volunteers who really like our materials, you'll also be able to order your materials quite soon as well.
Yeah.
So that's it for this week's episode of Podcast for Good. We want to thank everybody for listening. We want to thank Pamela for coming on. And we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.